Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits.
How old are you, Johnny? She asked.
16.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
A wise old king once said, "Of the making of books, there is no end." How true today. Of the overabundance of writing published each year, what's worth reading? The answer is simple. Read only the best. Come join the discussion on Just the Best Literature.
Well, hello again, everyone. Thanks for listening in today. Well, I do have comments, and I'm only going to read one today because we have a really exciting program for you today. But this is from, let's see, they don't tell me where they're from, so the comment goes, well, good day, Mr. Leap. So obviously it's someone that's met me or knows me. It says, I miss a lot of programs. I managed to tune into one or two, but I will like to tune in to much more. I am now listening to your discussion on Charles Krauthammer. I only knew about him from various Trumpet magazine articles. When I see the Trumpet magazine quote someone, I tend to look them up, which I did, and saw his book and was thinking of getting it. Hearing your discussion, I learned more about him than I would otherwise not know. He was quite an exceptional individual, but I was won over by your discussion about Charles Krauthammer on dogs. I look forward to getting the book. Thank you and all the staff for the programs. So we do appreciate that. And as we go through the rest of the series, we're going to be, maybe I should say through the final end of the series, we're going to be giving you some more comments. Well, we are nearing the completion of our Tribute to Charles Krauthammer series, and I have to admit it has been immensely valuable to me. I have learned so much from it. I think I've said many times I hated politics over the years, but I've really learned now to appreciate it. And I know a lot of the other hosts that have come in with me have said the same thing. They've really learned a lot from working with his essays. Now, I am going to be ending the Tribute to Charles Krauthammer series the last week in May. So you can look forward to a new series beginning in June. And I'll be announcing that summer series in a few weeks. And the reason is I need to talk about that series with a few people before I launch right into it. For today's podcast, I want to talk about an essay found in Chapter 13 of Things That Matter. Now, this chapter is titled A Golden Age. Now, the essay is also found on page 281, and the essay is titled Cold War Nostalgia. To help me discuss this essay, in the studio with me today is Grant Turgeon. Now, he's host of two KPCG.FM podcasts. He's the host of Behind the Work, and he's also the host of Trumpet Bookshelf, and he has, over the last couple of months, has been gracious to invite me on to his program. So welcome, Grant.
This has been a long time coming. I've been really excited for this to happen.
Yeah, well, thanks so much for taking the time to come on JBL. Now, this is a challenging essay. It's and I have to thank Grant for choosing. I when I invite a host, I say, you choose them. And I probably wouldn't have chosen this one because of my bad past status on politics. And I started to read it. I thought, oh, man, this has a lot of politics in it. But anyway, I think what I'd like to do just to start this off, and then we're going to get you rolling on this, is I think we ought to read the quip and the first quote. Now, Grant and I have some notes that you can't see, so he knows what I'm talking about. But again, Cold War Nostalgia. Now, when this does appear on the radio, it's going to be the title of the program will be Charles Krauthammer Bemoans Cold War Nostalgia, because he really is bemoaning it. And here he's quoting President Bill Clinton. Now, remember, this essay was written in 1993, so you're going to have to try and really remember your history from 1993. And he goes on at the very top, he's quoting Bill Clinton, and he says, "We look back to that era now, and we long for a, I even made a crack the other day. I said, gosh, I miss the Cold War. It was a joke, I mean. I don't really miss it, but you get the joke." And then, of course, that just set Charles Krauthammer off. and I think it was really good. Now, here's the first paragraph, and Listen to this very carefully. He says, it is not really a joke. It's an alibi. Man, he's going right for the kill right there. When the Clinton administration runs into trouble abroad, debacle in Somalia, humiliation in Haiti, dithering over Bosnia, it likes to preface its list of extenuations with, of course, we no longer have the easy divisions of the Cold War to make things clear and crisp and simple. They are so much harder now. So let's get your thoughts on that paragraph.
Well, the reason I actually wanted to talk about this is because it does show, like you mentioned in our drive over to the studio, that the Democrats never really change. They get so confused in the moment when they're trying to deal with whatever the issue is. And then they look back in hindsight and they act like they had the perfect solution the entire time. That's what Bill Clinton is doing here, because as Charles Krauthammer, someone who knows the history, clearly points out, Bill Clinton did not have this type of mindset. He did not view the Cold War this way at the time. He's saying this after the fact.
Right. Now the thing is, to all your listeners out there, this essay proves to me that Charles Krauthammer had a grasp on history. I mean, we've been through some of this before on him. He not only was he a doctor, not only was he a writer, not only was he just a great dad and everything else, is he was a student of literature, but he was definitely a student of history. And I have to admit, I had to do some real history digging to understand this essay. And Grant knows it because I gave him all what I found on the internet. So let's just briefly, maybe I could help there, but you could chime in here with us too. So he lists three historical events that, now remember, I had to go back, and I was alive then, and I remember them. Once I actually, you know, dug into them, I realized what he's talking about. So when he talks about the debacle in Somalia, he's actually talking about the incident known as Black Hawk Down. I think he does own, as Krauthammer said, you know, he's trying to excuse himself. I like that word, extenuations, because he's making excuses. Now, I even had to look up that word. I'm sorry. I mean, I know what extenuating circumstances are, but in the way that Krauthammer used it, he's saying, look, that it connects right with the word alibi. He's making excuses for himself, you know, and the whole debacle there is, of course, it started under President George H. Bush, the dad. You know, there was this internal strife in Somalia. You have these warlords, after each other. The people were starving. The UN, you know, wanted to help, you know, keep the people alive, you know, keep the everything open. And, of course, President Bush, agreed to that. But then it got to be a real can of worms. I mean, every soldier that was in there. And so, but what happened with the whole thing with Somalia and President Clinton, he thought he could get in there and, mix it up with the rebels. I mean, with the rebel leaders. And so he was going to send in these, America does have these beautiful helicopters. He's going to send them in there. He was going to grab two of the leaders, pull them out, and hopefully he's going to, get control of the situation. And it was an absolute fiasco.
From what I remember, just from, I read a book about this years ago, just because it's such an interesting story, but they actually were trying to use the exact same military operation three or four times in a row to try to extract these warlords from this crowded city center in Somalia, in Mogadishu, Somalia.
Yes.
And so obviously the warlords, all of these rebel fighters, figure out what the pattern is after a while, and they are just sitting there waiting for the helicopters to come in and start dropping soldiers to the ground, and then they're able to hit a couple of them with these rocket-propelled grenades. So it just really shows a lot of incompetence. This entire issue, who do they think they are? Just using the exact same tactic until the enemy knows what's coming. Right. And then why are they being so touchy about how to do it? They're just handling it so delicately when if they used a little more force, probably it would have been over a lot faster.
Right. So it ended up 18 American soldiers were killed and hundreds of Somalis, you know, and so... if you look back in history, if you get on the internet, all the people out there listening, you can see that you know, President Clinton was really, you know, held to the had his feet held to the fire over it, because he really was indecisive and kind of wishy-washy, and you know, which leads us into the humiliation in Haiti. Now, again, you have to really do some digging on this, But essentially, and I think as we go along through this, everybody out there listening, you're going to be even to be able to see clearer why Charles Krauthammer is picking, you know, these things, because it's really all related. But in Haiti, there was this military-backed communist government that took over, and it was destroying democracy in the area. And essentially, the Clinton administration wanted to, you know, step in and change things. And essentially what Bill Clinton was required to do was to try and get the democratically elected president. And, of course, that was Jean-Bertrand Aristide. And I remember this. I remember this from the news. And he was supposed to apply sanctions against the military-backed communist government. And he really never did. He never really pressured them. And, you know, Aristide never really got back in, at that I understand. And, you know, the nation just suffered.
And there's a really great quote from this article that you provided as part of the preparation for this show from this former senior Haitian official. And it really does sum up the way that Bill Clinton just was right in the middle. He didn't take a decisive stance in Haiti. This official said the Clinton administration team has treated this thing like suburban social workers, when in fact what they've needed is someone used to dealing with Chicago gangs. It's like it's like they're just trying to deal with maybe a small domestic abuse in someone's home, right, and not actually go on the attack against these hoodlums that they're trying to just put a stop to, basically.
But you know what? I also think part of it is, Grant, that, I mean, even if you look at the liberal Democrats today, they think they're smarter than everybody else. And so I could just see, well, we're just dealing with stupid foreigners that don't know what they're doing. And actually, they're being supported by who? USSR, China. you know, and we're seeing that today, even with the coronavirus.
Exactly. I mean, that's really something that's been consistent for decades now, where maybe they'll zoom in so close on an issue and they don't actually look at the real powers in the situation, and they don't like to identify who their real enemies are. I mean, we've seen that today with when they don't like to say the term radical Islamic terrorism. They like to put the blame on weapons instead of people who are mentally ill, for example.
Right.
They have to address what the problem is, who the enemy is, before they can ever hope to defeat it.
Right. So then the third thing he brings up there is the dithering. And of course, that word means indecisiveness over Bosnia. Now, this one is really a lot more challenging. And the thing is, I want to say with this is, to everybody out there listening, I mean, you can do some research on Bosnia, but I don't believe even the reporters that were reporting on this at the time knew what they were even talking about. And I think this is one of those areas where we have to put it into the context of Bible prophecy. And there was a lot going on with Yugoslavia and Serbia and Bosnia, and I'm not sure what I read even put it right, but America really does have weak will to stand up to actually Germany now, and they were rising to power in Europe. It was not long after the Berlin Wall had come back together, and you know, Germany was beginning to flex its muscles. And I think for all of you listening out there, the best way for you to understand what was really going on in Bosnia, I'm not even sure Charles Krauthammer really understood it, is there is a booklet that we do offer for free, and it's at no cost to you. There'll be no follow-up. And it's by Mr. Gerald Fleury, and it's called Germany's Conquest of the Balkans. And I think this is the book that will really help you to understand that situation. And I don't think we can spend even a lot of time with that. But it was America's weak will that has really, you know, allowed Germany to come to the power it's coming to today, and it's not even at full strength yet.
Right. Germany just hid behind the scenes there, which is what they're still doing now. You know, what they did back then was they declared certain rival factions within Europe as independent states, and then all of these factions basically turned on each other, and what happened was just atrocities, people,
right,
mass rape and torture and concentration camps,
right,
in Europe in the 1990s. It wasn't that long ago.
Yeah, but what I remember most is they were attacking Bosnia for what Bosnia was doing, but the other ones aren't even mentioned. And so it's like Bosnia was fingered out, but as Mr. Gerald Fleury says, there was a lot more going on behind the scenes that was actually what was really critical to know. And again, if you really want to know more about this, and you really should want to know more about it, because Germany is going to become very much in the news in the next couple months and years. And of course, Mr. Fleury has been talking about that on the Key of David. And of course, Mr. Stephen Fleury has been talking about it on the Trumpet Daily, even with the coronavirus, is that, you know, Germany is working behind the scenes, and this is probably going to help them get their final empire that they really want. So again, that booklet is titled Germany's Conquest of the Balkans, and it is by Gerald Fleury. So that is free to you. You can get it at thetrumpet.com. And again, you can even download a PDF for yourself. You don't have to worry about us sending you anything in the mail. And we just highly recommend that to you.
Bill Clinton handled that situation. Just consider the fact that Germany gave him the Charlemagne Prize.
Oh, I know.
That they were thrilled with the way that Bill Clinton went right along with everything Germany wanted,
sure,
in the region.
Yeah, he was weak. They said, hey, well, you know, thanks for being weak for us. Here's the Charlemagne Prize, who was the bloodiest conqueror ever, you know, in Europe. I mean, that should give you chills, you know. Anyway, this is such an amazing essay. Charles Krauthammer wants us to notice that the Clinton administration prefaced its list of extenuations, or an extenuation is, you know, something you say to lessen the seriousness of an offense. And so, Bill Clinton knows he made mistakes. Bill Clinton knows he was, you know, didn't do things the best way he could. And he says this right in the essay. He says, of course, he's speaking for Bill Clinton. Of course, we no longer have the easy divisions to the Cold War to make things clear and simple. Now, you know, again, that just sounds so democratic.
And the thing is, obviously, all those situations Bill Clinton had to deal with probably were really complicated.
Oh, yeah.
But the issue we have with that, I would think, is just that he's saying the issues he deals with are difficult, but all the other ones, he has all the answers. All the ones that he happened to not be in charge during, he could have done it perfectly. Yeah. It's like what they're doing with the coronavirus coverage now. They're saying that the president did it all wrong, but if they had been in charge, they would have done it right.
Right.
Meanwhile, let's compare what they have been saying to what Mr. Trump has been saying, and how they have been the ones encouraging people to live life like normal. They've been the ones comparing the coronavirus to the flu.
Yeah.
That's fine, but don't turn around the very next day and blame the president for everything that you would have done the same as him, basically.
Yeah, and of course, you know, President Trump is a little bit different. He's more of a fighter. And of course, you know, he's brought out all the things that Fox News has brought out. And of course, everyone hates Fox News as much as they hate Trump, too. But here was Nancy Pelosi inviting people to come to Chinatown, not to worry about this thing. You know, there is, the mayor of New York City, de Blasio, saying to everyone, oh, go out to the theaters, get out and go to the restaurants. And what area of the country has the highest number of COVID-19 patients? It's New York,
exactly.
You know. And so the thing is, it is so it's just amazing to me, I guess. In some ways, I've been slapping myself for not paying more attention when I was, young then, back in 1993. But, you could think that things are getting really bad all of a sudden, but it's been getting bad over a long period of time. And now it's just getting exposed.
Right. That's what people definitely need to realize. That's what the listeners need to think about. It's not just that, oh, well, today's Democrat Party is not your grandfather's Democrat Party. No, it's always been this way, but they have been a lot better at hiding it in the past.
Right.
Like you said on a past program, they had the Bush derangement syndrome.
Right.
Now it's the Trump derangement syndrome. Every Republican who comes through, they attack him with the exact same names, and then they pretend like when the current Republicans in office, they wish they could return to a time of George W. Bush because they all loved him, except for we actually remember that they attacked him nonstop.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Right after I did that program, people started calling it the Trump derangement syndrome. I thought, could they have listened to one of my programs? You know, not to pat myself on the back, but I did say it first. Anyway, I'm going to read quote B here. This is like the second paragraph down. He goes down and he says, so clear and crisp and simple, curious. He's really curious. I mean, that one word sentence shows what a master he is at writing. Curious. During the Cold War, especially during the last two decades, liberals claimed that things were not so simple, that only ideologues and dimwits like Ronald Reagan, for example, insisted on seeing the world through the prism of the Cold War. Now, can you imagine Bill Clinton waking up one morning, and I think this was published in the Washington Post. Let me just look. No, it was published in Time, so it was probably more likely that he would get his Time magazine out. And he wakes up and turns to this essay, and he's slapped with this, I can't imagine what he would have done. I bet his coffee didn't taste good that morning.
Well, that's the one thing the left has to hate more than anything is people who actually remember history. It just seems like they have such a low level of respect for the American people. It's no coincidence that they're the same people who want to get rid of history from the schools. So they don't want people to remember what even happened last week, much less what happened decades ago, and how you can see all the same patterns unfolding over and over again.
Yeah.
They just want you to forget. They want you to go back to sleep, and Big Brother will take care of it for you.
Right. Well, they even said that in England recently. We need Big Brother to take care of us.
Yes.
I want to get permission to do George Orwell on the radio again. That's that's one of the reasons why I'm holding back on the series, because I wanted to talk to your grandfather about this, because I really want to do it on the radio again. But anyway, in terms of like hiding history or covering up history, or even the liberals right now, and I know I have family that I'm now pretty much figured out they're pretty much liberal, and they're watching like CNN and they're watching MSNBC, and then they call me and they say, they're really petrified right now. And I said, stop watching that stuff. I said, just stay away from it. But the thing is, here the left right now wants to say that President Trump has done everything wrong. And on these broadcasts, I think his greatest strategy is to have these everyday broadcasts. And of course, Fox is doing it. And he's talking about what he's doing to, help America, curb the virus. And what is the first thing the liberal media wants to do?
Stop them from
happening. Them.
Not cover them on their networks.
They're not covering them.
That just shows right there that they're wrong. That someone who's right will never try to hide what his opponent is saying. Because
right.
The more the opponent speaks, the more the opponent exposes himself and shows how wrong he is.
Yeah.
There's a reason why MSNBC and CNN keep cutting away every time Mr. Trump is trying to talk at the press conference.
And then the day that he showed all the clips of what de Blasio said to go out to the theaters, and then the day that Nancy Pelosi is in Chinatown in San Francisco and she's out mixing with the crowd and kissing and hugging everybody, and then when she's in, on her Easter break, you know, in her $7 million mansion with her $24,000 refrigerator, showing off her Easter basket with candy. And then she has her refrigerator full of Jenny ice cream. And, you know, people are already in bread lines.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that absolutely drove them nuts. They could not believe that he showed those clips. And they said, what is this? You know, is this an election propaganda machine? You know, are you just trying to get reelected? No, he's showing them how foul they are, mm-hmm. and how they want to – they're not really wanting to help America. They're blinding Americans, and there's this fear-mongering going on.
Exactly. I mean, it's galling to me that they keep on acting like this whole lockdown is because they care about people, when – liberals have to be the most selfish people on the planet. They don't care about people. They don't want people to be doing well. They just are locking people down. And you can tell it's not for their own good, because they're actually being arrested when they go to the park. People are getting arrested for going to the park, for boating in the middle of the ocean by themselves.
Yeah.
Those laws only serve to make people absolutely miserable.
Yeah.
Those are not stopping the spread of the virus at all. It's just about making people miserable. And then what they hope they can do is turn it all around and say, remember how bad this year 2020 was for you? Yeah. It's all Mr. Trump's fault.
Yeah.
And they think people are going to fall for that.
Yeah, and I know you and I are not trying to diminish the fact that the virus is serious, and it is lethal for a good portion of the elderly. And again, but so is the flu. And, you know, it's like you never hear, well, let's just shut down the economy because the flu's back.
No.
You know, and so, again, I think they've gotten all caught off guard. But the thing is that the one commentator on, I'm not sure which liberal station it was, but it definitely wasn't on Fox. I mean, she said, we're all going to get it and we're all going to die. Now, that would terrorize people.
That would. And that's people's main faith today, is in doctors and whatever the experts tell them. And they just have to go along with whatever they're told. And then the Democrats, they stoke it as much as they possibly can. It reminds me of...
Just ramp it up.
It reminds me of what Teddy Roosevelt said about the man in the arena. You know, how it's a lot harder to actually be fighting to the death in the arena while people sit up in the stands and criticize. They just act like they have all the solutions in the world. But what would have happened if they were actually in charge right now? They wouldn't have stopped any of the flights from China or Europe. They wouldn't have taken any of the precautions that have actually saved probably tens of thousands of lives.
Yeah.
They just like to talk big while conveniently they're not responsible for what takes place.
Yeah. Yeah. So it is amazing. I'm going to keep going on in the essay here. One other good quote he says here that Crowder talks about, Bill Clinton said, we had an intellectually coherent thing in the Cold War era. I remember parts of the Cold War era when I was a kid, and they had, you know, all these, sirens go off to, you know, because we were also afraid that the Soviet Union was going to attack us with nuclear bombs. So we had to have, you know, hide your head under your desk drills, you know, and, you know, because that, you know, an airplane would fly over. I remember being terrified. You know, is he going to drop a nuclear bomb? You know, we don't know. So anyway, just everyone out there, hold your thoughts, because guess what? We're out of time for this first program. So... sorry about that, but it is all the time we have for today's program. Now, next time, Grant and I will continue with Cold War nostalgia. And remember, now we are reading selected portions of Charles Krauthammer's book of essays titled Things That Matter. Now, we will be ending the series, like I said, at the end of May, but there's still a few more weeks to come. So you can still buy this book at Amazon.com. You can find a used copy of the book at abebooks.com. And, of course, you can also check your local library. So please write me any comments you may have to jbl@pcog.org. And you can follow JBL on Twitter at JB Literature One. You can also follow JB on Facebook. Simply search for Just the Best Literature. So until next time, keep reading.
You've been listening to Just the Best Literature on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.